Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and joining us to say goodbye to this wretched year 2020 is Michael Kester.
Yep. I mean, I know, like, there's a 50% chance when you go by 2020 that somebody's going to be like, 2021 is going to suck just as bad until, like, this time next year, but I'm that person. So,
hey, look, I mean, part of the reason I moved was try to reclaim the end of 2020.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I don't know, can I do like a whole year's worth of stuff just in the last month?
Right.
So I've survived, you know, snowpocalypse or whatever over here in New York. Things are going pretty good.
Yeah.
2020's going great. I don't know what you're talking about.
Whatever. No, you're right.
Look at all these movies coming out. No, we're doing nonstop 2020 films. Such a good year for a film.
Here's the thing about, here's what I do like about 2021, and you're not going to like it.
2021?
I said what I said, goddammit.
All right.
Horse Girl and Possessor, by the way. Welcome to Double Feature, Horse Girl and Possessor. These movies, big ones, all the big ones by all the studios that you like to pick on, I can watch them this year. I'm not happy that I don't see them in the theater, but I am happy that the new James Gunn movie comes out. That's literally a great feeling. That's a great feeling for me.
Unfortunately, I moved into the Alamo Draft House, so I'm a little upset that my 3-minute walk to go see Infinite Draft House Pass of Films,
I know,
has been thwarted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm literally in Austin, Texas, where that is like there's seven of them. But you know, maybe fucking who's the Hellboy? Lionsgate is a Lionsgate. Legendary. That's what I'm trying to think. Legendary is all like, man, don't put my Dune out. So there's still some fun fighting left to be had. But that, we'll save that for next year.
You were so sure Dune was going to come out, and then coronavirus just to thwart Dune.
2020 has brought us a number of great films. And one of my absolute favorites we're covering today, Possessor. And then we're also going to cover this movie, Horse Girl, that a bunch of people, like I said last week, were telling me to watch. And let me just tell you up front, anybody who watched these two movies, I'm sorry it was such a bad time.
Yeah, I was going to say one of my favorite films of the year, Horse Girl.
Yeah.
I don't know what. Surprise.
I hadn't seen, neither of us had seen Horse Girl. So we could have warned you last week if we had seen it, but you're going to have a bad time. And I knew Possessor was a bad time, but I assumed Annie from Community in a movie called Horse Girl wouldn't be delivering the same level of bad time as Possessor.
Ah, delightful romp. I don't know what you're... See, this really makes me feel good that we've gotten back to the pulverizing movies of Double Feature, the hard art.
It feels like 2020 up in here with these two movies. I'll tell you that.
So this is it. This is our last show of the calendar year anyways. And as I mentioned a little bit on the Mank and the Assistant show for those 2020 movies, we're just trying to catch up with all the stuff we didn't see this year. We'll talk more on our year end in June or July or whenever the fuck it is about the look back on this year of the show and virtual festivals and all of them. But for the first time, I really sort of felt like we should be observant of the calendar year as well, just because it's been such a weird, it's the weirdest year for film since I've been alive. And maybe in the history of film, never has the entire way that film is distributed and seen been immediately uprooted with no warning. You know, we started this whole 2020 decline thinking, oh yeah, this is a minor setback, a temporary inconvenience. And right about when we started, you know, the year 13 run of our show, we were sort of starting to realize like, oh, this is gonna be like this for a while. So much that even when we ended the last year run of our show, we didn't spend a whole lot of time going, oh my God, this is what has happened to cinema and we need to adapt to it. We were still kind of in the state of like, oh yeah, it's been a little strange these last few months here. So here we are at the end of the year, and for the second show in a row, I felt like, let's just do more 2020 films.
Mm-hmm.
I want an excuse to see them. And now I've seen Horse Girl and Possessor and Bad Cat. I watched that again.
So we should do them in this order, I think. You and I talked ahead of time about exactly why you do them in this order.
Well, you want to backslide into Possessor. You want to
take
the Horse Girl adventure, ride the magic horse into Possessor.
Yeah, I mean, the amazing thing about the pair in this order is that if you just sit down, what order did you watch these in?
I watched them in this order.
Okay, so then you don't know. But as somebody who didn't watch Horse Girl first, who saw Possessor earlier this year, if you just sit down and go, I'm going to have myself a nice Possessor, you don't. You have a bad time, and it's like challenging. And you know, you do that thing, you know, when like dogs hear a high pitched whistle and they like turn their head. Yeah. That's just me, like
watching Possessor.
Yeah, that's over great. And over, and it hurts in a really like really good like challenging way. But it's just a tricky movie. But I feel like Horse Girl starts in such a comfortable, familiar place that by the time it ends, you're like right in Possessor territory.
I don't know. I must have turned into some kind of sick fuck over the course of doing this show. I'm just like, yes, come to me, bleak and oppressive films. Yes, fill my life. I don't know. I don't know what the fuck is going on with me.
Well, but I mean, I just haven't had enough of it. You know, it's like,
it does feel like it's been a while since we watched movies like this.
Yeah. If you haven't had a warhead in a while, it's way more sour than like when I was 14 and I was just like popping them like TikToks.
Oh, I see you got your sense of taste back since you caught coronavirus seeing a movie earlier this year.
Mm-hmm. Additional content.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/double feature.
That was a fake transition into that. Michael has not caught coronavirus seeing movies.
Damn straight.
But
healthy as fuck.
But if movies ever come back, watch out Michael Kester. Yeah, so we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/double feature. This should really be the time for us to harp on it because we are not going to make it through the year on the current Patreon funding. So guys, you know the address. Go over there. It's the end of the year. Did you end the year with $2 more than your fiscal budget thought you would have? Great.
Or 600.
Send it. Yeah. Hey, do you got an extra $600 floating around? Send it to Double Feature. Patreon.com/double feature. Treat yourself. Be an executive producer for the week or the month, I guess. We'll say your name on the show, make a big deal of it, be like, who the fuck is this person? Woo, hello, new friend. It'll be great. Everybody will be really happy about it.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be a future version of ourselves to be happy because we'll still be here. So that's great too. Plus you get the back catalog of all the other years of the show. There are many of them. And additional content. I would like to talk you into doing some more additional content, but first we got to actually fund the show.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure we can get, you know, weekly episodes up. That would be good. So it's patreon.com/double feature. Without further ado, there are spoilers and there is Horse Girl.
I don't know how you logline this movie but here's why. Because this movie is linear in a way most narratives don't approach.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just take last week, for example. We did Mank and The Assistant. Both of those movies, they're linear in a narrative. It starts in one place and ends chronologically later and sort of entertains a lot of the ideas within that path, that arc, right? People talk character arcs, story arcs. There's an arc.
Mm.
This is not a movie about a person who starts one way and through the events of the film discovers something about themselves and ends changed. It is that, but it's actually a movie that starts in one place and then ends in a place that you're not sure it ever started in the...
Yeah.
You're not ever sure that where it started ever existed.
The parasite has always lived in the mind and has slowly crawled its way out.
It just takes you through this I mean, I don't even want to say spiral because that indicates that there's circles. It's not. It's so fucking linear, and it's down. The line goes down.
It's like falling off a cliff.
Yeah.
Where you accelerate faster and faster as you reach the bottom, I guess. Off a cliff toward a black hole.
My point is you never return to a place that's familiar to the film, I think is the most important.
Yeah.
That's the aspect that I'm trying to get. You go to the apartment, you're in the apartment several times, but every time you're in the apartment, it's different for some reason.
Yeah.
Where you are, where she is as a character is not the same person who was in the apartment previously. And even her relationship with the woman at the fabric store played by Molly Shannon, that's her best friend at the beginning of the movie. And that person looks away seeing her across the parking lot by the end.
Yeah, isn't really even in her life. I mean, the movie barely revisits. I mean, her roommate just disappears off the map.
It's insanity.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point, right? The whole point is, well, now we can get to a log line.
If you didn't watch this, skip or pause the show, you are missing out on an unbelievable voyage of a movie, just a thing that overwhelms you. This film is so kind of below its station and should really be recognized for just the, I don't know, sometimes we talk about these movies, especially the Netflixification of everything and how disposable it becomes. And man, first of all, this movie just feels very special. The people who made this movie cared deeply about it. You know, it feels like a handcrafted artisan film. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is the thing we're always talking about where we're like, this movie, is it special? Does someone put a poster of this on their college dorm room? And this is a movie that if enough people were to see it, it will find the people that it deeply fucking speaks to.
Yeah. I mean, right now we're talking like Arrow anniversary release, but if enough people see it, it's Criterion.
Yeah. Yeah. it's really pretty crazy. The structure is, you know, a big thing that, well, let's look at this log line, I guess.
Let me log line it. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, so I know I feel like I did this last week, but fortunately last week I didn't deliver on it. So just like chalk that up as a win. But there are two versions of this log line.
Always. There's increasingly two or three versions of the log line.
But this one is, it's one of two things. This is either, and I'm gonna actually like hold my finger to remind myself to come back and do the second one.
Mm-hmm.
This is a movie about a girl who discovers conspiracies that speak to things in her life. As she begins to unravel these conspiracies, it sends her into mania, only to find out that some things may actually be confirmed.
Okay.
A girl with hereditary paranoid schizophrenia discovers that she has paranoid schizophrenia.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I look at it definitely, you know, the second, that's always my inclination to take the
yeah, but you know, the movie has the approach. Has your levitating horse scene, and that's the movie's sure. doing. They always do that. And it's not just that scene. It's the shot at the end with the horse and the boots. That's the movie being like, you probably thought she was imagining it.
Wink.
But she's not even in this scene to be imagining these boots.
Right. The whole movie is actually from the horse's perspective. That's what we've learned.
It's a female horse. That is the horse girl.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah, really the, you know, the true log line needs to incorporate Alison Brie is in this movie and she takes a lot of emotional kind of turns, and whatever we need to do to explain to people that that's what happens in the movie, then I'm okay with that log line. But yeah, I think it's watching a girl unravel in the great tradition of one of my favorite types of films, the sort of like Black Swan. We talked about this, but I mean, there's a million of them. Some of the Polanski films, it's just watching, what was Repulsion? I think that's the one I was reaching for in my head. But fuck, man, I guess even Rosemary's Baby, to a degree, kind of plays with the same things. Watching someone completely unravel, and structurally, what's different about that is, you know, this movie has these junctures where typically you might follow a certain choice, or if you want to be really weird, you take a completely different turn. And I find the choices it makes at the key junctures along the timeline of the film to be so fascinating. Because you're about 30 minutes into this movie where we've set you off on the voyage, right? And things have gone so wrong up to this point that I think this movie has to end in like deep sci-fi aliens come to the planet, enlist her help, and or start like, you know, like Mars Attacks type territory. I'm waiting for this to take such a left swing. Because it can't possibly, 30 minutes in, you realize it cannot possibly be a movie simply about a girl with a hereditary problem that is, you know, some form of anxiety and or depression that is causing her to lose her mind. Because where would the movie go? Mm-hmm. I mean, to carry that story forward after we've already seen her kind of have the psychotic break is like, that's as far as movies go. And what's really fucking fascinating to me is that the whole movie, in reality, is just about watching what happens to somebody after they do the 30-minute psychotic break that a movie would usually fill itself with.
Sure.
The sort of like 72-hour holds, like what goes on in your head once you're like way past the point of no return.
Well, and the other thing that I think is really powerful about Horse Girl, other than its wanton disregard for characters other than the main one.
Love that.
Is... so
always
good. Oh my
that.
God, it's amazing. But it's that...
follow a single person into madness. Do it all the time.
But it's that you... normally these scenes, the scenes you're talking about, your mental break scenes, they happen outside the character, and that's usually punctuated by them... I don't know. Let me just fucking do one off the top of my head. But they throw all the fucking shit off their dresser, and then they punch a mirror... and they grab their head and they scream and, oh my God, what's happening to me? And then somebody that they are close to comes in and asks them what's going on. And then, you know, it's very objective mm-hmm. when you see the mental break happen. Horse Girl never leaves her head. So by the time the schizophrenia, I'm just going to call it schizophrenia because that's what I believe it to be, but let's just call it like schizophrenia in quotes. Imagine it's air quotes every time I say it. By the time the schizophrenia becomes apparent to me, there's breadcrumbs fucking 6 miles back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's really not until, I don't know if I can really think of an actual giveaway. Because, you know, because for me, there's this like conspiracy theory scene where she's talking to like her boo.
Yeah.
And like that scene is just like shit I ignore people saying to me on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, people are like, you know, the government's actually made of fucking lizards. Yeah. And Donald Trump is, you know, brought to you by the letter Q or what the fuck ever. And I just ignore it. And so like this happens and I'm like, oh, okay. So you're like those kind of people.
Yeah.
And also the other thing that this movie does to like help me dissociate like her being quote unquote normal is the way that she watches Lucifer or Purgatory. right. You know, the fact that like she's got that like she... and let's just throw ourselves under the bus, but her attention to that show is our attention to Lost seasons 3 through 6.
Right. Yeah.
Where it's just like, I mean, there is like a religious attention to detail and this naivety that it extrapolates to the real world in a way that the majority of the populace understands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so again, she's that character so early that I go, okay, well, she's a little different.
Yeah.
And so by the time it's like, you have a mental problem, I go, oh yeah, that was actually pretty clear pretty early, but I just assumed she was a little quirky until
she won't leave the ranch. It's adorable.
Right.
I mean, the movie's full of those. The scene you were mentioning with the conspiracy theories with her new boyfriend, I love that scene where they're finally in the cemetery and he kind of freaks out. And it's such a weird scene for me to watch, because the movie is very much trying to put you in the perspective of him, to go, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you're crazy. But I am so on board with her at that moment, because this guy has shown up and been like, yeah, yeah, aliens, I believe in that, Bigfoot, yeah, I'm totally there with you. And then when she's like, oh, well, so because you believe in these clones, I just assumed you would come to the cemetery with me and dig up my mom. And he's like, oh, I didn't know I wasn't just saying stupid nothings over dinner. I don't...
Right.
And I'm like, oh, well, this is why we don't do this, guys. This is why we don't indulge in these insane beliefs just casually. Like, hey, this is kind of fun, because I will drag you to the fucking graveyard and make you dig up someone's mom. Logical conclusion of where we're going with this stuff. I think there's a, you know, there's a lot of really sharp right turns the movie has to make in order to, or, you know, I kind of like the falling off the cliff metaphor better, really. But it has to kind of like put its foot on the gas with the crazy again and again. And I think so much of this is a tribute to Alison Brie. I mean, I want to like call out the way she plays these scenes for making me go with it, because there will be, from one scene to the next, there will be another degree of like, oh, we're in deeper than we thought, which is what the narrative requires, but is hard to swallow. And you just feel like, wow, how did we get here? Except for the reality that she personally carries in the scene of her believing it, where you just see on her face like, okay, this clone thing, I don't know how this character got to believing in clones, but I'm told it's just like in her blood. And so I just have to go with it. And when you see her sit in the room, she really believes that she's a clone now. And I think the performance is what carries that. Or, you know, when she gets really, she'll be in a conversation with somebody and she'll be excitedly telling them her conspiracy theories. And then at the moment where she realizes they don't believe, she'll turn to anger. She'll turn to really some kind of sadness, or you'll see on her face the realization of like, oh, this is what this person thinks. And over again, the film is able to do those things, I feel, because the performance is so good that I'm just like, well, she believes it and she's the one, this is, you know, the whole film is her journey. So I'm just gonna come with you on whatever crazy path you're on.
But there's a left hook that the movie does toward the final act that I think is really the crowning achievement of the movie, and it's definitely part of what you're saying. The movie starts and she's a quirky nerd, and then she's like making fucking quilt suits because of like this clone theory. And at this point, you know, you watch the madness, and the movie and her performance are telling you she's crazy. I mean, full stop, she's crazy. And by the time you as an audience goes, she's crazy, I see what's happening, she's crazy, the movie starts giving you these clues. Is she though?
Well, yeah, because we're so in her perspective right at that point.
But that's
that we believe it the way she does.
But it's not just that, because it starts doing things that we are so at her mercy. That I think by the third act, we start going, okay, we need to actually take the narrator, you know, unreliable narrator to a certain degree. We need to step back.
Yeah.
But then her psych ward roommate goes, how do you know about the ramp? Yeah. And I'm like, fuck, right. What do you mean? Yeah. How do you know about the ramp?
Right. Well, there's just enough. It's so good at this, man. Like it knows exactly when to just put, and I think Possessor's going to do this too, where it just calls enough back into question where you're kind of like, oh, fuck, but hold on a second.
Right.
We also can't be done talking about this movie before highlighting this thing it does towards the end. There is such an intense kind of critique of public mental health care because of where the movie ends and what makes it feel, I think what makes it feel so bleak. There's this great scene where she's basically gone into the hospital And things have gotten, you know, it's the scene where she's sitting there talking to the clinician or a caseworker.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I wanted. So there's a point in the timeline of the film where it's kind of time to wrap up the movie. We've been doing all this crazy stuff. I'm not really sure we're getting anywhere, but look, tapping on the clock, time to wrap up the movie. And so she's in a room with the caseworker, and the runtime of the film needs her to have gotten better in this scene. That's just what it's time to do. Our main character sits down with the caseworker, and they make some breakthrough, some epiphany happens, and now we can coast out of the end of the film. But she's actually worse than ever. She's gone through this whole mental break. Now we don't know what the fuck is real and what's not. And she's shown up to this room, and the guy comes in, and he's like, hey, great news, you know, because you've gotten so much better, and it's been 72 hours. You're actually leaving. And then she kind of goes, oh, well, here's all this stuff I believe. And actually, I had a personal breakthrough because of all this stuff that shows I'm way fucking crazier than you knew.
And he's like, la, 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 you're leaving.
And he's like, oh, actually, you're much worse. And, oh, no, wait, it has still been 72 hours. So you're ready to go. Off you go.
Yep.
And it's just this amazing, the film continues to play it happy,
mm-hmm.
even though it's a horrifying conclusion that she's out there and she's in her worst position. She has, mm-hmm. we don't even know if half of her safeguards were real at this point or who in her, does she even have a roommate back home? Like,
does she
have a home? Right.
Does she have a home?
So her circumstances are way worse. But the 72 hours is up, so off on the street you go. And the movie just tra-la-la through the end of it. It's like, oh, great, she got released. Everything's better. You know, the score's telling us that. The lighting's telling us that. The whole movie is going, oh, you just pick up the horse. We're on a whimsical adventure. But us as an audience, we almost have this powerless kind of like out-of-body experience of, wait, why is the film telling us this is such great news? This is awful. There is no one going to help this girl. Like, is she homeless now? What's going to happen? The movie's like, don't worry about that. We're all having a silly time. Isn't this great? And then just ends. And for me, that's the thing that makes it feel so much more intense for me, because it's just like being in a car, you know, backsliding down a road, seeing I'm about to get into a huge collision and I'm not driving. The movie's just going, nope, we are doing happy ending. You are powerless. Good luck with this. Up credits. Anyways, see you later, guy.
I know. Well, and then this other movie is like if Blade Runner was fucking made in the second half of Baskin. It's
the
like...
reaching deep for that. It is like the second half of Baskin.
Right?
Oh, my God.
It's this fucking... I mean, one of my favorite things about movies like Possessor is that, you know, the marquee, if you saw it at Video Value in 1993,
mm-hmm.
it would be in the sci-fi section.
Yeah.
That's the headline genre is sci-fi.
Yeah.
But like watching the movie, like you're just being punched in the balls so many times that you don't even get to think of it as sci-fi.
Well, it feels like the great old sci-fi movies that were actually horror movies.
Yeah.
And we kind of just stopped. I mean, we've sort of stopped making any original sci-fi, as I've lamented before on the show. But I didn't know what to expect of Possessor. I hadn't seen Antiviral yet. And so I didn't know what to expect of Brandon Cronenberg. And to get a really slick science fiction movie that was brutal as fuck, it's just like, oh, there is a huge opening in the marketplace for these and I want them. So bring that on. All right, let's do a log line here. What do you got for Possessor?
Okay, so this is actually easy because it's such a high concept sci-fi.
Love it.
Which I love it, yeah. So we are set in a world where there is science to assume the body of another person to perform assassinations. The movie takes place following one of those agents, but they do not exit the body in time.
I would much prefer some kind of log line like you work at this VR company that's like Amazon. It scans your blinds to sell you more blinds or whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm.
I love that they never explain really what this company is, but it just exists in like the, yeah, you know, like like the dystopia we live in. It's like more of that. You get it. And it just moves right the fuck on. It's like, I don't know. I guess it's like our assassin is in someone else's body and they're like in a VR headset looking at another computer. And on that computer, they scan videos to look at window fixtures, whatever.
Right.
So building the world, I mean, God, does this create a fucking playground?
Mm-hmm.
Just the world we live in for this. Oh, one of the highest achievements I think I can credit a film for is showing me something I haven't seen before.
Right.
You know, movies can do a lot of things, but
when
wow.
I talked about this recently, but every year I always go, what is my number one best movie of the year? And that's really the only thing I ever talk about the following year. I don't care about a top 10, but I will always tell you the number one. I talked about this with 20,000 Leagues Under the Silver Lake or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you are absolutely correct. You look at my list going back 20 years and every single movie on that list can be summed up by haven't seen that before.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why Possessor was my number one.
I know that movies provide a lot of different things for a lot of different people. I know that some people are just looking for a movie to feel perfect. It hit all the beats. It did, you know, whatever thing. For some people, they really wanted to speak to them personally. And, you know, those are truly my favorite movies are the ones that like speak to me personally. But the longer I am alive on Earth and the more time I spend in the film industry, especially, I'm just looking for somebody to hit me with something, even if I don't fucking like it.
Right.
Just yeah.
You're looking for the new sex act from
Dirty Shame. Yeah. The scene where he reaches out to grab a little unstable particle in the world's largest macro shot. I'm just looking at it like, I don't even know what this is. And my brain is still trying to get used to that before he goes into the VR Amazon blind sorter job. And I'm just thinking like the world of this film is not that different than ours. It's basically our world. And there are even some things like their cell phones that seem like a regression from our world. But fuck, are there just things delivered from a filmmaking perspective and just the overall vision of it? I mean, both of these films are super fucking visionary today.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just getting hit with stuff that I haven't seen. I don't know how to react to it. And even now sitting here talking to you about it, I mean, I know I love it, but I Possessor was one of the first movies I've seen in a long time that I immediately got done with and went, God, I got to watch that again. I got to go back to when they did this thing and really look at what the fuck that thing was and go over it and scrutinize it. And I guess Horse Girl definitely calls for that too. I mean, to some degree, I did feel that way about it. But because these are such deliberate little set piece sort of, you know, there's a puzzle to it. There's a sort of like, what is this particle thing? And I know that's there and I can kind of like circle it and then my brain just won't let it go. It just gets fixated even while I'm being pelted with these other things. You know, the rest of the world building, but also the practical effects, just like the brutality of a lot of these moments.
Mm-hmm.
It was also one of the only movies this year that I felt like I was getting a full theater audience experience just on my own.
Yeah, yeah.
I was making a 250-person packed tiny theater reaction out of having teeth
totally
gouged out, and well, I was and there I think crying I, for everybody.
I think it comes from sort of this, and tell me if you like can see what I'm saying, because this is really one of my like grand scope takeaways from Possessor, is I think that let's just use the metaphor from the end of Horse Girl where you're talking about backsliding into a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about how Horse Girl sort of ends in the place that Possessor exists. But I feel like Possessor exists in the exact moment of the car crash, in that I feel like the pacing is almost in slow motion, and that while not every shot is a macro shot, the film somehow feels like a macro shot of this world.
Mm. You think you're getting like an instance.
Yeah, I mean, this. it feels like an ultra, you know how you online you'll see like a photo and you can zoom all the way into the mountain peak and see like two people holding hands.
Yeah.
That's how this movie feels. It feels like a single snapshot that you can see everything really detailed in just this moment.
Yeah.
But the first thing you want to do is turn that camera around and look at more shit.
Oh yeah.
And the whole time the movie is just like it's feeding you every detailed tiny morsel of just this thing. But the whole time you're sitting there with your mouth on its tit going, I just need to know what's in the other tit.
I mean, I was with you for most of that. I think we mostly got there. Yes.
Do you see what I mean? How the movie just feels like the pacing just feels.
Well, you know what it is.
It feels like it's teasing you the whole time.
Yeah. Well, it's watching the best episode of the season for some great new show and having seen none of the other
exactly
stuff. You know, it's playing a demo that takes place in the middle of this video game. It's just. There is so much else out there that feels like it needs to be capitalized on. But I also think, you know, there's almost something that seems like a disservice calling it like one episode of television because it, in a way, it sort of says it didn't seize on the opportunity to waste 20 hours of our time instead of just being an hour and a half experience. But I think it's so much better in this singular way because we want more, we just want so much more, you know, but the part that we're getting is really the most exciting part. We could spend episodes and episodes building up this world, who this character is, the position they're in, and then watch the break. But because we show up to the movie and we kind of know from the beginning that something's wrong. I mean, we start with the man, woman, person, camera, TV test, or whatever the fuck that is.
Yeah.
Did I get those right?
You nailed it.
My mental capacity is in cognitive decline, so I imagine that I don't remember what those are, but there it is. But yeah, look, we know something's off, and we don't waste time getting to the point where we know that's going to be something we have to contend with. But once it is... Once it gets to the wrinkle that you described in the log line of, and then she doesn't leave the body, I mean, all hell breaks loose and it is nonstop from there to the end. It's just, a complete fucking bloodbath. It is, you can't trust anyone around you. I mean, we're basically watching a fight scene between the body, the host, that she inhabits and herself fighting for their lives in these kind of like psychotic break, you know, sort of edits and visuals. Of course, the big like icon of the film, you know, the sort of poster icon of the face. I love that so much of the iconography of the film is based around this kind of metaphorical practical effect thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way it shows that he's back in control and then trying to one up the person who's taken him over. But even just the major event of the film being this assassination, I mean, I just love being in that moment too. As soon as we figure out, all right, these are the rules of how this thing operates. Now what you're going to do is go in and kill this person. It's like watching the heist film. I mean, every mm-hmm. second of that I love. I can't wait to see how, you know, okay, we got to cause a big fight. How are we going to do it? And then I know that she's got this weird sort of, I haven't even really figured out what it is yet. This like almost serial killer impulse to not just shoot the victim, but to mangle them in some horrific way. Mm-hmm. Again, just a thing that doesn't go explored to the point where like it tells you. It's things like that that are leaving me wanting so much more when I get to the end to watch it again and kind of explore like, what is this fascinating person who is just mangling everyone? Like, what is her damage? What's going on there? And before you know it, the fucking thing's over, which is also just the best thing I can say about something that is like a total ride like this. I feel like the sci-fi movies that have been kind of bigger blockbuster, slick sci-fi, you know, my biggest strike against them is they kind of go on forever once I sort of already know what we're doing. And then some of it's just a slog. And I feel the same way you did, that this was a blink and then it was over. And I could just keep fucking going back to it, enjoying its awful, wonderful, brutal, practical effect, disgustingness. I can't wait to see it again, honestly. I don't know.
I know. It feels that's
what is wrong with me.
That's another major takeaway from me from my top of the year picks is movies that when they end, I just want to put that right back on. Movies that are just more of a place than a film. You know, we talk about that a lot with directors. We should have talked about it more when we did Herschel Gordon Lewis, but it's that same sort of vibe where you just want to go to that place more than you want to watch 2000 Maniacs.
Well, and how exciting that we're talking about new directors today too. You know, finally, we're talking about people who are very young in their career. I mean, I just think that's it's so promising for the years to come to see what else these guys make. The bigger takeaway and kind of wrapping up the show.
In the year.
Doublefeature.fm, patreon.com/doublefeature. Thanks to Charles Crawford, Ben Ecker, Joachim Vernon, and Ross Mahler. Joachim? Yep.
Sounds good. Joachim, that's a name Vernon. I've heard.
Yeah, I mean,
I've not heard on this show before, but I've heard the name Joachim before.
Right.
Welcome.
Thanks a lot, guys. It's patreon.com/doublefeature. But yeah, the thing that I really got out of this experience today and I wanted to try to focus on and hold in my mind as we move into the next year is before we did these movies today, even after last week, honestly, I still felt like, oh my God, 2020, there were no good movies.
Mm-hmm.
And when I really look at my list, we've done a lot of great 2020 movies. We won't go through them all. That's for the year end, but there was some good stuff. But I didn't get hit in this particular way until this episode when I watched these films. I had, you know, it was the same thing like the year a Gaspar Noé film comes out, you know, if you hadn't seen it yet and you're like, oh, I just really didn't get that good Gaspar Noé feeling this year. And then you're like, oh, you watch this, you're like, yeah, that's why I didn't see the fucking Gaspar Noé movie. I feel like I didn't get my films. I didn't get the heady stuff. I didn't get the real art house, the cerebral, the brutality. And then we had this episode and just when I was being a total fuck and saying that 2020 didn't have the stuff that I craved, I watched literally two more movies and boom, there it was.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, here's a fucking Possessor. How do you have a conversation about the movies of the year? And honestly, Horse Girl, like,
well, and that's what I've been going through every time you've talked about a top 10. You're like, nothing good's come out. And I'm just like, well, Possessor's sitting at the top of my list and I'm pretty good on that.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm saying is it only takes one or two movies.
Yeah.
You know, if you're looking for your best film of the year and it hasn't hit you, you're only one film away from finding it.
That's right.
And we don't all get that lucky, but man, there wasn't a lot this year. Just watch more of it. It's good that stuff is still out there. And it scares me a little bit that people aren't finding it, that I'm seeing a lot of that same sentiment. But it's also exciting that everybody's, you know, end of the year lists are so weird.
Also, let's be honest. I'm confident Promising Young Woman would have made it onto my list, but I refuse to go to Draft House to see it.
Michael Kester, afraid of the cinema, afraid of going to the theater, are you? It's a pretty good sign, anyways, for the end of the year. And I didn't think we'd be ending the 2020 on a positive note, but there we have it.
Well, there you go. You found maybe your favorite movie of the year. Stay tuned to find out if in between now and 2021, Eric sees a better movie.
Or two more films. I'm just now thinking there's two more films.
Yeah, but those won't count. But sure. So next time on the show, we're going to do like movies where kids are zombies or something. We're going to do Cooties and Little Monsters. Not Little Monsters, the one with Howie Mandel. The one with Lupita Nyong'o. Watch more fucking film.
Bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.